And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, June 30th. Want you to have a pencil and paper handy because you never know when you're going to hear something that you're going to want to write down, figure out names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, whatever it takes to take action. And let's start off with announcements. Here in California, non-leaded ammunition implementation phase 2 starts tomorrow, July 1st. Starting tomorrow, non-lead shot will be required when out hunting upland game birds with a shotgun in California, except for dove, quail, snipe, and any birds taken at licensed game bird clubs. In addition, non-lead shot will be required when using a shotgun to take resident small game animals, fur-bearing mammals, non-game birds, and any wildlife except for depredation, any wildlife that are taken because they're depredating. Existing regulations on the use of lead ammunition in the California Condor Range when taking Nelson Bighorn sheep and when hunting all California Department of Fish and Wildlife wildlife areas and ecological reserves remains in effect. The next phase of the implementation goes into effect next year on July 1st when hunters must use non-lead ammunition when taking any animal anywhere in the state for any purpose. There are no restrictions on the use of lead ammunition for target shooting purposes in California. Non-lead ammunition for some firearm calibers may be in short supply, so hunters should plan accordingly. Don't figure out that every hunting shop will have what you need. And you're encouraged to practice your shooting with non-leaded ammunition to make sure your firearms are sighted in properly and shoot accurately with non-lead ammunition. This all started on October 2013 when Assembly Bill 711 was signed into law requiring the phase-out of lead ammunition for hunting anywhere in the state by July 1st, 2019. The law also required an implementation plan designed to impose the least burden on California's hunters while adhering to the intent of the law. And a new wolf may be in California's Lassen County. And this story from the Center for Biological Diversity, as found on the Earth First Newswire, new evidence released by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife suggests there may be a wolf in Lassen County. The information, but not yet conclusive, includes photos from 4 trail cameras taken between August and May and hair sample from one of the sites. While DNA test results were inconclusive as to whether the animal is a wolf, a dog, or a wolf-dog hybrid, the fact the animal persisted through the winter in this remote location leads agency officials to believe the animal is likely a wolf. The animal is not wearing a radio collar, so its movements will be detectable only by trail cameras, tracks, scats, and sightings. Looks like a pretty nice animal to me, very wolf-like. A nice picture here. We're crossing our fingers that another wolf has arrived in California as part of the ongoing recovery of wolves across the West, said Amaroke Weiss, West Coast wolf organizer with the Center for Biological Diversity. Wolves continue to prove that scientists have said all along that California has great habitat for wolves. The first wolf to enter California in nearly a century was OR7, a radio-collared wolf from Oregon that dispersed from the Imnaha Pack in northeastern Oregon and entered California in late 2011. OR7 ranged across 7 northeastern counties in California before returning to southwestern Oregon, where he found a mate and now had litters of pups for 3 consecutive years. Then in August of 2015, California's first known wolf family was confirmed from trail camera images captured in Siskiyou County, named the Shasta Pack. The all-wolf family was comprised, all-black wolf family was comprised of 2 adults and 5 pups, and in December 2015, wolf OR25, also originally from the Imnaha Pack, crossed the border into California for 3 weeks before returning to Oregon, and has made several more forays into the Golden State since that time. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife also reported this month that scat samples from the 2 adults and 4 pups of the Shasta Pack collected last October have been DNA tested, and the results indicate that both the breeding male and female adults are related to wolves in Oregon's Imnaha Pack. Of the 4 pups whose scat was tested, 1 was female, the other 3 are males. Gray wolves, scientific name Canis lupus, are native to California but were driven to extinction in the state by the mid-1920s. After OR7 dispersed from Oregon into California, the Center for Biological Diversity and its allies petitioned the state to fully protect wolves under California's State Endangered Species Act. The June 2014, the California Fish and Game Commission voted in favor of the petition, making it illegal to intentionally kill any wolves that enter the state. In 2012, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife convened a citizen stakeholder group to help the agency develop a state wolf plan for California, and then circulated a draft version of the plan for public comment in early 2016. The agency anticipates releasing the final version of the plan sometime this year. Quote, with the potential confirmation of another wolf in California, we're glad that these magnificent mammals are fully protected under state and federal law because each new wolf we gain is critical for the species to be able to recover here, said Weiss. We drove this species to extinction here, and we are extremely fortunate to get a second chance to see these ecologically essential and beautiful animals return. A U.S. charity loophole has enabled trading of 1,300 endangered animals in this story by John Schiffman, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Last year, after a Minnesota dentist sparked an uproar by killing a lion named Cecil while on safari in Zimbabwe, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service placed similar African lions on the endangered species list, making it illegal to import them as trophies into the United States. But for African lions and other threatened and endangered species, there's an exception to this rule. Hunters, circuses, zoos, breeders, and theme parks can get permits to import, export, or sell endangered animals if they can demonstrate that the transactions will enhance the survival of the species. Often records show this requirement is met in part by making a cash contribution to a charity, usually of a few thousand dollars. The practice has angered both animal rights activists who say it exploits wildlife and exhibitors who describe the process as unfair and arbitrary. In the past 5 years, the vast majority of the estimated 1,375 endangered species permits granted by the Fish and Wildlife Service involved financial pledges to charity, according to agency documents reviewed by Reuters. For a $2,000 pledge, the Fish and Wildlife Service permitted two threatened leopard cubs to be sent from the roadside zoo to a small animal park. After a $5,000 pledge, the agency approved the transfer of 10 endangered South African penguins to a Florida theme park. An application now under final consideration would permit a South Carolina safari park operator to send 18 endangered tigers to Mexico to participate in a multi-million dollar movie in response to a $10,000 donation to charity. Craig Hoover, a senior Fish and Wildlife Service official, said his agency considers many factors before granting an endangered species permit, among them a species' biological needs, threats, and population size. Charitable contributions to conservation programs are just one factor in granting permit evaluations and not a requirement, he said. It's not necessary. All that is considered. Said Hoover, there may have been an education component, an outreach component, and a captive breeding component. Under the Endangered Species Act, exception permits may be granted only for scientific purposes or to enhance the propagation or survival of the affected species. According to a recent Fish and Wildlife Service document reviewed by Reuters, very few of the Endangered Species Act permits that we issue have direct benefits to the species in the wild. Most applicants provide an indirect benefit, such as monetary support, to meet the enhancement requirement. Late Friday, U.S. Representative Brendan Boyle, a Pennsylvania Democrat who serves on the House Foreign Affairs and Oversight Committees, asked the agency to halt the practice. Boyle said exemptions to endangered species laws are intended for humanitarian or environmental purposes, such as providing medical attention to a wounded animal, not commercial uses. He said the charity pledges are unreliable at best and amount to an empty promise in exchange for an exemption to our bedrock species conservation law. The agency usually does not try to independently verify that donations were actually made or the charities often located overseas are worthy, an agency document said. Typically, we rely on the applicant, the document notes. Hoover said applicants supply this information through annual reports and agency granting programs. Last year, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals sued the Fish and Wildlife Service over a 2014 endangered species permit issued to Tarzan Zerbini Circus of Webb City, Missouri. The permit allowed Tarzan Zerbini to take two elephants, Shelley and Marie, on a Canadian circus tour on the condition that it pledged $15,000 annually to an elephant charity and raise another $50,000 annually from patrons. We call it pay to play because that's exactly what's going on, allowing these people to promise money in exchange for being able to harm endangered animals, said PETA General Counsel Jeff Kerr. The Fish and Wildlife Service is actively conspiring and cooperating with people to violate the Endangered Species Act through this program. The agency defended itself against PETA's claim that the process is illegal, but the lawsuit apparently triggered a government investigation of Tarzan Zerbini's financial pledge. Records show the service determined the circus had only contributed half the amount promised and had raised little, if anything, from patrons. On April 21st, the permit was suspended. Last week, PETA withdrew their lawsuit. Larry Solheim, a Tarzan Zerbini consultant who served as the general manager for 26 years, said the circus made good faith efforts to comply with its pledges. He said honest mistakes and misunderstandings caused the other half of the money to be contributed late, and said technical issues hampered efforts to raise the $50,000 from patrons. Solheim said the concept of requiring conservation efforts is a good idea, but he described the permit process as too focused on foreign donations. He called it a game that can resemble political extortion. You're just essentially buying a permit if you pay this conservation fee, he said. It's just totally subjective. If they want to have this kind of requirement, they need to have clear guidelines. Joe Cuneo, whose Hawthorne Corporation leases endangered animals to circuses and is often criticized by PETA, said he lost business for failing to promise to make charitable payments. It makes me so mad, Cuneo said. It feels like a scam. Hoover, the agency official, said PETA and the animal exhibitors are wrong. We would deny any form of pay-to-play policy is in place, formally or informally, Hoover said. He added, we would deny that we tell people they must make charitable contributions, but if they are engaging in activity where the import or export isn't contributing to conservation, then there must be some other means by which they must be contributing to conservation. The permit application to send 18 tigers to Mexico for a Hollywood movie was filed by Bhagavan Antley, who operates the Myrtle Beach Safari in South Carolina. Antley declined to name the people behind the movie, which is tentatively titled Tiger Island. The plot revolves around tigers living on an abandoned island and a group of children who end up shipwrecked there. The permit is still pending, but records show the Fish and Wildlife officials directed that Antley confirm a pledge of $10,000 to charity and a promise that the movie will have a conservation theme. He has agreed to do so and said he thinks the agency's process is good because it helps endangered animals. Antley said $10,000 is a fair contribution for the right to use 18 tigers on a multimillion-dollar motion picture. The company thinks that's a hardship to spend $10,000 for what used to be free, Antley said, but he added, if it becomes a hit movie, that will change hearts and minds. More than $10 million contribution to conservation. Last year, the Fish and Wildlife Service approved the sale of 10 African penguins from a California theme park to the Miami Seaquarium. We are thrilled that our guests will be able to observe these fascinating creatures and at the same time learn about this endangered species and what we do to help preserve our feathered friends. Andrew Hertz, the Seaquarium's general manager, said in a press release in February. A spokesperson said Hertz wasn't available for an interview. The Sea Park built a new exhibit for the birds called Penguin Isle, a spectacle that includes a 9,000-gallon pool with an acrylic underwater swimming tunnel, allowing visitors to come face-to-face with the penguins, the release says. The Seaquarium, which averages 600,000 customers a year, charges $99 for a family of four. As part of the endangered species permit approval, the seller agreed to make an annual contribution for 5 years to a South African charity that rescues penguins soiled by oil spills. The annual pledge was $1,000. And South China Sea reefs have been decimated as giant clams are harvested in bulk in this story, written by Farah Master, Sharon Shi, Joyce Zhu, Venus Wu and Stephanie McIntyre, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Ornaments made from the shells of endangered giant clams, renowned in China for having auspicious powers and the luster of ivory, have become coveted luxuries, a trend which has wreaked havoc on the ecosystem of the South China Sea. China banned harvesting of giant clams last year, but in the tiny seaside town of Tianmen on the southern island of Hainan, most stores still sell products made from the over 4 foot wide shells. This once sleepy fishing village has transformed over the past 3 years to harvest clams on an industrial scale. There are around 460 handicraft retailers compared to 15 in 2012, with the industry now supporting around 100,000 people. The price of giant clams has risen 40-fold over the past 5 years, while the plundering of the seabed has led to severe degradation of the reefs, scientists and academics said. With rising tensions in the South China Sea, Tianmen fishermen's important role in strengthening China's claims to the disputed waters and supporting the People's Liberation Army Navy are recognized by the Chinese government, said Zhuang Hangzhu, an associate research fellow at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. As a result, authorities have turned a blind eye. China claims most of the whole of South China Sea, setting it at odds with rival claims from its Southeast Asian neighbors, including the Philippines. The region accounts for more than a tenth of the global fisheries production. Qinghai government, which looks after Tianmen, announced in March 2015 that it would strictly enforce the ban on digging, carrying, and selling of endangered marine species, including the giant clams. The government is enforcing the ban, said Zhuang Hongying, an official of the Qinghai Government Foreign Affairs Office. Another official called Zhao and said the authorities are not doing anything to support the industry. If the business is legit, our government won't stop people doing it, he said, but there's no government file saying that we are going to do something to promote the shell industry. Fishermen said they had not been allowed to dig for clams since last year, while shopkeepers said new supply remained tight. To harvest the clams, the entire reef has to be dug up, said Naomi Lin, a marine biologist at the National University of Singapore. What used to be really good coral reefs in there have definitely been decimated over the last 2 or 3 years, Lin said. Tianmen fishermen's income has more than tripled over the past 3 years, according to media, while the town has urbanized rapidly with neatly paved roads and modern buildings. I think the Hainanese have essentially taken out all the giant clam shells from the South China Sea, dead or alive, said Ed Gomez, senior advisor at the University of the Philippines Marine Science Institute. During a recent visit to Tianmen, stores lining the harbor promenade were mostly empty. Many retailers said that business had dropped since April due to China's tough economic climate and soaring temperatures. There are no tourists at the moment. We have to wait until September, said Yu Gao, owner of Xiangyu Huan Craft Store. Yu from Beijing came to Tianmen to buy property 4 years ago and set up the store with a local partner as the economy boomed. In the good times, we could earn 10 million yuan, about $1.5 million per month, he said. And arrests have been made at South Herefordshire Hunt in England in this story by the Bristol Hunt saboteurs, as found on the Earth First update. Secret footage has been released, which appears to show live fox cubs being delivered to the kennels of South Herefordshire Hunt before being thrown to a pack of foxhounds. The lifeless body of a cub is then seen dumped into a wheelie bin before another is taken to meet the same fate. Independent group, the Hunt Investigation Team, supported by the League Against Cruel Sports, filmed the horrific scenes, saying the footage is damning evidence of the reality of fox hunting and is not an isolated incident. The footage has been released as part of a major ongoing league investigation into cubbing, the secret illegal practice of training young, inexperienced hounds to hunt and kill fox cubs. League intelligence reveals that fox cubs are not killed during this hunt, are sometimes captured and kept to be used as live training bait for the hounds, like in this horrifying case, or taken to artificial earths to provide a ready supply of foxes for the hounds to hunt in the coming season. The footage taken at South Herefordshire Hunt Kennels follows an earlier league investigation which led to the rescue of a fox being held by the Belvoir Hunt and the subsequent brutal alleged assault by Belvoir Hunt supporters on two of the charity's undercover investigations in retaliation, leaving one of them with a broken neck. League Against Cruel Sports CEO Eduardo Concalves said, This is the ugly and vicious truth behind the glossy image portrayed by Hunts. What we believe this footage clearly shows is that cubs have been ripped away from their families, kept captive, and then callously thrown alive to the Hunts to rip apart. The horror and the suffering these cubs must have gone through is almost unbearable to think about. Hunts wants us to believe that fox hunting is a sport, and I can't start to get my head around how this is sporting. What they're doing here is training the dogs to kill foxes, as simple as that, and unfortunately this is not an isolated incident, as this barbaric practice is happening across the country. The hounds won't naturally kill foxes, so they must be taught to do so, and this footage exposes the gruesome training secrets of hunts in the United Kingdom. We know this happens every year during cubbing season when young foxes are surrounded by the hunt and dogs sent in to kill them, but to catch this despicable activity on camera at a hunt kennel is almost impossible. With this evidence in front of them, we hope those administering the law and the people of the United Kingdom accept once and for all there is no justification for the cruelty that seeps through every aspect of fox hunting. Two people from Hereford and a further individual from Abergavenny have been arrested on suspicion of animal cruelty in connection with the incident shown in the footage at the South Herefordshire Hunt Kennels. All three individuals have been released on police bail. Portia Landry from the Hunt Investigation Team says, "The Hunt Investigation Team, acting on intelligence, placed sophisticated surveillance equipment around the South Herefordshire Hunt Kennels. Once concluded, the evidence was given to West Mercia Police. Investigators also removed the bodies of two fox cubs from the site and handed these to RSPCA, Royal Society for the Protection of Cruelty to Animals, to conduct postmortems. The Hunt Investigation Team does not consider this to be an isolated incident and are monitoring other hunts. The incident at the South Herefordshire Hunt Kennels is not the only time hunts have been caught capturing foxes for their own use. In May of 2015, the League Against Cruel Sports investigation led to the discovery and rescue of six fox cubs in a barn on land linked to the Middleton Foxhounds hunt. The League believes these fox cubs were kidnapped as a ready supply of animals to be chased by the hunt. In December of 2015, the League carried out an undercover investigation that resulted in the discovery and rescue of a fox the League believes was used to be hunted by the Belvoir hunt. And in March 2016, two League investigators were seriously assaulted and robbed of their camera while monitoring the Belvoir hunt. The alleged assault is thought to have been in retaliation for the same investigators' discovery and subsequent release of a fox being kept in a shed on the land hunted by the Belvoir hunt. In addition, intelligence reports received by the League Against Cruel Sports investigators implicated more than 20 hunts in capturing foxes to be hunted during 2014 and 2015. And there will be no bears hunted in Florida this year, officials say in this story by Gray Rohrer of the Orlando Sentinel, as found in the Earth First Journal. There will not be a state-sanctioned bear hunt this year because Florida Fish and Wildlife Commissioners voted Wednesday night to delay a decision on the hunt until 2017. "I'm leaning toward a pause," said Fish and Wildlife Chair Brian Yablonski. "I don't think a pause means hunting goes away forever." The 4-3 vote came after more than 8 hours of public testimony at a meeting in the panhandle town of East Point, with most speakers opposed to a second bear hunt in as many years. Opponents of the hunt said it isn't necessary, and although numbers were increasing in the state, the bears are still an imperiled species in Florida. Efforts to reduce encounters with humans should be limited to educating the public and taking better care of garbage, a temptation for roaming bears, they said. "The problem in Florida is not an excess of bears, but an excess of trash," said Kate McFall, Florida State Director of the Humane Society. State biologists had recommended a 2016 hunt of up to 12 days with fewer licenses issued, fewer areas available to hunt, and increased reporting requirements. But that idea was voted down 4-3 by the commission. The move to go ahead with a second hunt renewed a clash between hunters in favor of the bear hunt and environmental groups opposed. Animal rights groups and environmental groups have held protests throughout the state decrying the move. State estimates put Florida's bear population at 4,350, a 60% increase since 2002. In central Florida, there are 1,230 bears, up 19% since 2002. Interactions with humans are becoming more frequent as well. There were 243 bears killed by vehicles in 2015, up 7 times from 1990. Fish and Wildlife Commission's volume for bear-related nuisance calls jumped from 4,000 in 2011 to over 6,000 last year. Some of those resulted in harm to humans. Sherry Hutchins, whose daughter survived a bear attack in East Point, Florida in 2014, spoke in favor of the hunt. "They're a nuisance in our neighborhoods. They tear up our property, they kill our animals, and now they're attacking us," Hutchins said. Other anti-hunt speakers insisted bears aren't a nuisance and more studies and examinations of bear population estimates are needed. "They don't bother us in our community because we are not allowed to have our trash out until the morning after pickup," said DeBary resident Susan Cognac. State biologists said the hunt is just one part of the state's approach to managing bears and reducing interactions with humans. Fish and Wildlife Commission is providing grants to communities to provide bear-resistant trash cans, banning harvesting of palmetto berries, a favored snack for bears on state lands, and increasing warnings for homeowners who fail to secure garbage cans, another bear temptation. "A lot of people seem to think we're still in the 1970s and we have an endangered bear species," said Thomas Eason, director of Fish and Wildlife Commission, Division of Habitat and Species Conservation. Black bears were placed on Florida's protected species list in 1974, and hunting bears was banned 20 years later. In 2011, Fish and Wildlife Commissioners removed bears from the list, but the ban on hunting remained in place until last year. Last year's hunt, the Fish and Wildlife Commission issued 3,778 permits and scheduled a week-long hunt that was stopped after 2 days when hunters killed 304 bears, nearing the set limit of 321. The enthusiasm among hunters to allow for another short bear season after the 21-year hiatus wasn't quenched by last year's hunt. "I'd never killed a bear in my life, but I would love to," said hunter Henry Hamlin. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update today. The Earth First Update is produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on 9 p.m. on Thursday nights. You can hear a rebroadcast here on Free Radio tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. You can tune in to WMNB 107.1 FM in North Adams, Massachusetts, Friday at 5:30 in the morning. Or you could tune in to KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. You can also go to the Grateful Dread Public Radio, an internet radio station, at gdprnashville.org Sunday mornings at 2 a.m. That's gdprnashville.org, and you can also hear them on tunein.com and spotify.com. Or you could go to radioforall.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous Earth First update. And I ask you to please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and to air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.